And now, In-Flight Entertainment is proud to present Marauder Radio.
Oh, you men are all alike. 7 or 8 quick ones and you're off with the boys to boast and brag. You better keep your mouth shut. Oh, I think I love him.
Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon.
You may be right.
Oh, it looks good on you, though.
I may be crazy. But it just may be a lunatic you're looking for.
I don't have a problem.
Oh, okay. Good
noise. And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the host of Marauder Radio, your lunatic lover and poet, Mr. Bob Zima.
Ha, ha, ha. Yes, indeedy. Ha, 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 ha. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the beautiful Grumpy Gator Cafe. My name is Bob Zima, and I am the cafe's resident lunatic lover and poet and the host, arg mateys, of Marauder Radio for Mental Live, Pirate Radio for Male Mental Wellness. On this show, we talk about two things. Number one, how to get your head out of your ass, an old cranium extraction, as they say. How to get your head out of your ass, how to start thinking, evaluating, interpreting, understanding the world around you in much healthier and more effective ways. And then number two, once you are thinking in a healthier, more efficient and effective way, get your ass off the couch and get busy living the life you want. Get busy getting out there, making your dreams come true. Speaking of which, I did that last night, although partial dreams came true. My wife and I went to the very last home game of my local AHL team, the Rockford IceHogs, AHL team for the Chicago Blackhawks. And since I really enjoy hockey, yes, I do. I love it. We went, had some great seats, hard not to at an AHL game, a little bit more difficult at an NHL game, but we had a great time, had a great time. Unfortunately, the IceHogs lost, which means they have to win today or at least get a single point, one single point, please, against the Milwaukee Admirals. And if they do, then they're in the Calder Cup, which is the AHL's version of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we'll see what happens. But it's been fun. I probably go to 5, 6, 7 games a year. My wife always says, why don't you just get a season ticket package? And I'm like, well, here's the problem. I get a season ticket package, then I'm obligated to go to the games they've selected for me. I want to go to the games that I selected for myself. Last night's game, they played the Manitoba Moose. I just love moose, and I like to say the word Manitoba. And so this is beneficial for me. I can enjoy moose and say Manitoba. The other thing is, call me crazy, but I believe when you go to a hockey game, you should hear the Canadian national anthem, because that's where the sport was born, for goodness sakes. So I always love hearing both anthems right before the hockey game. Anyways, last night I got to see something I had never seen before with my own eyes live, and that is a line brawl. And for those of you who are not familiar with hockey, you are not a hockey aficionado, not a problem. Let me teach you something. But a line brawl is when all 5 players get into one massive fight. Sometimes the goalies will fight. That's the cherry on the top of the cake, man. That is nirvana when the goalies get into a fight after a line brawl. That did not happen last night, but all 5 Ice Hogs fought all 5 Moose, and it was nuts. They got a great video of it on the Rockford Ice Hogs Twitter page. I forwarded that onto my page saying something like, men showing emotions and communicating effectively what they're thinking and feeling. And some people might have a problem with that. Some people might say, oh my gosh, Bob, you're a professional counselor. Why are you promoting fighting? I'm not. I'm promoting men being men, working within the rules of the context of the game, expressing their thoughts and their emotions.
When is it suddenly outside of the rules of the game of hockey? When did it become no longer entertaining to watch a line brawl? 14, 15,000 people last night watching this hockey game, all cheering this thing on because hockey fights, people, are not life lessons. They're entertainment. Let's keep it within its own context. What, we're teaching young kids to fight? No, we're not. We're teaching young kids that part of the game is standing up for yourself. Part of the game is standing up for your goalie. Part of the game is standing up for your other teammates. And even if that literally means taking one on the cheek for your team, then doesn't that then beget character? Don't we show people how to overcome adversity? Yes, I know. We don't ever want to say that fighting is an efficient, effective, and healthy way to express one's own emotions and one's thoughts. But is that really true? What if you're defending yourself? What if you're defending your family, your friends? What if you're defending what it is you have worked hard to acquire? Is not fighting at some point or another justified? And this is the problem with taking something like a hockey game and a line brawl and trying to turn it into some life lesson, some self-coaching thing, some psychological babble, and not just leaving it for what it is. It's a line brawl in an AHL hockey game, in the last regular season home game for the Ice Hogs as they fight for a playoff berth. It's not a teachable moment. Other than here are five guys and another five guys expressing what they're thinking and feeling in that moment. Doesn't have to be, you know, this earth-shattering, oh my gosh, we have to change our society and the world moment. It can just be an entertaining sporting event moment within the context of the rules, within the context of what the game, in its essence, is supposed to be about. We don't have to make everything politically correct. We don't have to make everything fit into some kind of box that some faction somewhere in some dark room with a bunch of people who are like-minded but don't want to understand other people's perceptions think we should do. Let's just leave it at a hockey fight in an AHL game that had some significance, had some meaning, and that is within the context and rules of the game.
And there's a carnival-like atmosphere here tonight. The crowd is gathered, and, well, you can feel it.
Eddie Shore?
Oh, it's on Eddie Shore.
Old-time hockey?
It's on old-time hockey. You're ruining it.
Have a nice day.
I'm telling you, he jumped it.
Sure did.
I mean, gloves off, stick down, no warning. He challenged the Chiefs.
Call his name.
Call his name!
The toughest team in the Federal League. Not this. Bunch of...
They are just a bunch of fancies.
Everybody is just on their feet screaming, kill, kill, kill! This is hockey!
We could all land in the clinker for this.
Performance tonight has got to be a bitter disappointment to these 4,000-odd Charlestown fans who have packed this war memorial, paying good money to witness this fiasco.
The Bob Zima Show and Podcast will return in just a moment. Gentlemen, is your testicular sac starting to look old and worn? Is your nut hammock not as smooth as it used to be? Does it feel like sandpaper when you stroke your scrotum while watching sports in bed? Is the ball sack wrinkled to the point that your woman wants absolutely nothing to do with it anymore? Then you need to try and apply Bob's Big Ball Balm, guaranteed to smooth out the rough edges of any Family Jewel chalice, with no rubbing and no buffing. Bob's Big Ball Balm will restore the shine and gloss to any worn and beaten down scrotum. Bob's Big Ball Bomb is not a wax. It's a space-age polymer formula. Look, we polished these balls and kept them in a pair of underwear for 50 consecutive days. And look, the finish on this scrotum still looks shiny and glossy. Gentlemen, try Bob's Big Ball Bomb today.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the beautiful Grumpy Gator Cafe. My name is Bob Zima, and I am the cafe's resident lunatic lover and poet. And you have tuned in for Marauder Radio for Mailmen to Wellness Live. That's right, folks. Another Sunday at 9 a.m. Central Time, and we are back on the air. If you're listening live and you have a comment, a thought, you want to share a suggestion, you just want to vent, or you want to challenge me, give me a call at 515-605-9800, the guest call-in number. If you would like to call in and you would like to share your thoughts, 515-605-9800. That's right. We're live every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Central Time. Central Daylight Savings Time, CDT, baby. Sounding cool when you use the initials. CDT, look at how cool I am. Yes, indeed. In 1977, and I may be dating myself here, but in 1977, folks, the greatest cinematic year in the history of film occurred in the summer of 1977. Two behemoth movies were released that summer. The first, of course, Smokey and the Bandit, eastbound and down, loaded up and truck it. We gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run, yeah. And the other behemoth, colossal film released that year was Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Oh, my gosh, yes. That's no moon. That's a space station. These are not the droids you're looking for. So if you were born, if you were born in 1977, like my younger brother Mike, you probably don't remember these films. But if you're like me, born somewhere in the 60s or the 70s, these films, mostly because you had a penis, were exciting films. They still are a staple of our youth. They still are very influential within our perceptions of the world, right? They influence how we interpret and take in the world, right? But let's remember what I just said related to hockey. Let's keep it all within context here, folks. First of all, these films came out in 1977, a very different world in 1977 than in 2023. Second, they're movies. They're written by people telling a story, telling a tale. Smokey, the Snowman, Sheriff Buford T. Justice, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia, Darth Vader, they're all characters. They're all characters who are told what to say and what to do by writers, producers, and directors to craft a tale, to craft a story. These are not characters that we say, suddenly, let's lead our lives by these characters and what they said and what they did. No, they can influence. They can inspire. They can be muse, but they should never dictate what our life is like, because that's up to you. That's up to you. So whether you're a Star Wars or a Smokey and the Bandit fan and a big fan of 1977, let's not forget Airport 77 came out too. That was a great movie with Jack Lemmon underwater, a big 747. Let's not forget that. There's another great movie. But let's look at Star Wars and Smokey and the Bandit, right? So we've got Star Wars, we've got Smokey and the Bandit. great stories, right? Great adventures, great characters, much of them taken from the idea of Carl Jung. For those of you who are not familiar with Carl Jung, he is a psychologist that was a peer of Sigmund Freud. And Carl Jung talked about the Jungian archetypes, right, which is a lot of these movies and a lot of our own lives are based on. Carl Jung believed in the collective unconscious. He believed that there were narratives that all of humanity shared. They were consistent in this collective unconscious, that the story of humanity is consistent, that there are several themes, just like in there are several themes, right? Boy meets girl, boy and girl argue, boy and girl get back together, boy and girl spend the rest of their lives together, right? Every Disney princess movie follows this theme. Nowadays, of course, we've got boy meets boy, girl meets girl, boy and boy argue, girl and girl argue, boy and boy get back together, girl and girl get back together, and we live happily ever after. Mixing around the characters doesn't matter. It's the spine, the single golden thread through the narrative that matters. And in these narratives, we always have white hats and black hats. We always have a villain and heroes, right? Think of every Avenger movie. It's the same thing. Usually our hero has to overcome some great tragedy. There is some kind of adversity that our hero or our heroine must overcome. And this is what we enjoy, right? When we go to the movies, this is why 7 out of the 10 biggest box office smashes are Avenger-like movies. I'm not sure if that's right. Don't quote me on that. 5 of 10 may be more accurate. But why? Why do we love it? Because, as Carl Jung said, this collective unconsciousness, this sense, this almost existential essence that we have of story is so powerful. It's why we love the movies. We love novels. We love television. Because our hero or our heroine or both must face adversity, must overcome challenges, must demonstrate character and perseverance. We love it. And eventually become victorious, right? The old and infamous phrase of the happy Hollywood ending. But let's twist this a little bit and talk about you. What is your story? Do you even know your story? Can you articulate your story? Can you articulate that single thread, right? Good versus evil. Destroying the old Death Star, right? The Star Wars saga. When you put the whole universe together, there's many stories. But when we think of the first one released in 1977, what do we see there? We see the story of young innocence in Luke Skywalker and old wise Obi-Wan Kenobi. So we've got the warrior in a way, and we've got the old wise magician, right? Like Merlin, and we've got King Arthur. So you start to see how some of the greatest stories, including the overall story of humanity, has these many features that Carl Jung talked about in his archetypes. There's always the wise one, the young warrior, the princess with Danish on the side of her head. We've got the rebel or the bad guy in Han Solo, right? We've got the mischievous Smokey, right? The bandit, there we go. The mischievous bandit played by Burt Reynolds. And then we have the snowman. We have Sheriff Buford T. Justice, who is seen as the white hat in this, and of course Bandit the black hat, but Bandit so likable and Sheriff Buford T. Justice is kind of likable. You know, we create these characters, right? So think about your own story. What's your story? Do you know it? Can you articulate it? What are the challenges you faced? What's the adversity popped up in your life to create plot twists and an ever-growing tension within the plot? What are the adventures you have been on? Think of the adventures of Smokey and the Bandit, right? So we think of the bandit and the adventures that he has, and Sheriff Buford T. Justice is following him around. Or we think of the adventures of Luke and Han and Leia and where they have to go. Not just in episode 4, but then you can expand it out into the full episodes, right? And we even go to prequels and we go to ones afterwards and we see these characters that we have really come to know and we learn their backstories and it's all story, right? But what's your adventure? What are the things you've had to face down? Where's your perseverance coming from? How did your character get developed? Are you even aware of the power of your own story? Are you aware of the adventures, your life stories, the mini stories, the mini chapters within the overarching story of your life? Are you familiar with the adventures and the adversity and the challenges that you faced and how that developed character, how that has influenced your personality and your temperament, but also how personality and temperament have influenced the very adventures on which you have gone? Are you a white hat or a black hat? Or do you shift it up? Are you a good guy or a bad guy? Doesn't make you a villain necessarily. A bandit in Smokey and the Bandit wasn't exactly a white hat nor a pure black hat. We rooted for him because he's that guy that bucks the system, right? It's kind of like Han Solo. There's always that character too, right? And then there's always the love interest, Princess Leia or Frog and Smokey and the Bandit. For those of us with penises, it tends to be women. Are there women heroines whose love interests are another male? Yeah. But the two shows that I'm talking about, the two films that I'm talking about, the love interest, the compassion, was a female. Speaking of which, who are the people in your story, in your adventure that you love? What are the passions that you have? What's the compassion you show others, right? In Star Wars and in Smokey and the Bandit, there's lots of passion. I love the time that Sheriff Buford T. Justice is getting a Diablo sandwich, and he goes on and on about how Bandit is driving through people's backyards, smashing mailboxes, you know? Or even when Darth Vader at the very beginning of the movie comes on and challenges Princess Leia. No, you are part of a rebel alliance and a traitor. Take her away, right? There's passion. Passion for the rebel alliance. Passion for pushing back against an oppressive empire. Who are the love interests in your story, in your adventure? And what is the passion that drives you to show compassion to others? Do you know? Because if you don't, why not? Your story is powerful. The adventures you have had, the adversity you have overcome, the challenges you have faced and resolved create character. Your personality and temperament influence the creation of those narratives, and those narratives further form and shape you into who you are and how you see the world. Know your story. Be able to tell it. Be able to share it. And a lot of times it's no different than Smokey and the Bandit or Star Wars, because we've all faced a mean and evil empire at some point in our life as a metaphor. Or we've all had a Sheriff Buford T. Justice of Texas chasing us. And we've had to take on that challenge. We have loved and been loved, and we have passion for something which creates compassion for others. And also we've had allies. Bandit had all his fans. I remember he put out over the CB radio and all the CBers jumped in their crazy cars, a wide variety of cars and trucks, and they blocked Sheriff Buford T. Justice. Certainly, Luke had Han and Chewbacca and Obi-Wan. And then, of course, he became Red Leader, and he had all of Rebel Alliance, helping him take down Darth Vader and destroy the Death Star. Who are your allies? Who are the people in your corner? Who are the people on your pit crew that when you come in needing refueling, adjustments, and fresh tires in order to run the race of life, who are the people that come over the wall and help you to make adjustments, refuel, and get ready to get back on the track? Who are your allies? If you want good mental wellness, if you want to be happy, healthy, and whole, if you want to be healthy and effective in your life, write your story. Know who your allies are. Know if you're white hat or black hat or both. Know what your passion is. Know who you love. And also, know where you've come from. Understand the adversity and the challenges you've already overcome and what that has done to create your character and how that has influenced the way in which you take in the world, how you understand the world, your past narratives, your past story that plays in the drive-in theater right between the ears. That has a lot of power and a lot of influence. Understand it. Know it. Live it. Breathe it.
Personally, I give us one chance in three.
You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Every day's a gamble. I figure if I wake up in the morning, I'm a winner.
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out to far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
In 6 miles to Chicago, we got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Don't drive angry, man. Don't drive angry.
Oh, righty.
You're listening to Marauder Radio with your host, the pirate king of the hole in the soul crew, Mr. Bob Zena.
Mr. Bob, come on down here. Help me, Jesus! Help me, Jewish God! Help me, Allah!
What the hell are you doing in the bathroom day and night? Why don't you get out of there and give someone else a chance?
Hey everybody, it's Bob Zema, and I just want to tell you about my brand new psychological masterpiece. That's right, I wrote a book, and it's called Toilet Therapy, Healing Anger.
Do not go in there.
Woo!
It's a crapper companion guide, and it's designed to help you remove the crap from your soul while you're, well, you know, doing your business in the library.
There is a tiger in the bathroom.
You can be the tiger in the bathroom that takes care of that roaring lion and tiger out in your real world. You'll spend hours and hours on the toilet with my crapper companion guide, learning how to heal your anger and improve the quality of your life.
Yeah, I believe you did tell your soul the devil.
Cruise on over to BobZema.com to get your copy of Toilet Therapy Healing Anger and start your healing process today.
Who does number two work for?
Oh, you men are all alike.
I need a lover and it won't drive me crazy.
Seven or eight quick ones and you're off with the boys.
I need a lover and it won't drive me crazy.
To boast and brag.
I need a lover and it won't.
Marauder Radio, starring your pirate king of the Hole in the Soul crew, Bob Zemo, will continue in just a moment.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate life for me.
Indubitably, everybody, Bob Zemo, your rockin' Radio Romeo, or the king of the Hole in the Soul crew, pirate king, there we go. Pirate King of the Hole in the Soul crew with you here for Marauder Radio for Mental Wellness Live. Indubitably coming to you live from the Grumpy Gator Cafe. And I want to talk about something that is proliferating our society as we speak, our pop culture. You'll hear it all the time, man. You'll hear people say, I'm setting a boundary. Oh, no, 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 no. I am not going to allow you to hurt me or to challenge my feelings, so I am going to set a boundary. Oh, that's right. No, I am not coming to your party because the other day on Facebook, you did not like my post, and so I am setting a boundary because there is no way I'm going to allow you to continue to trigger my trauma. Oh, my God. No. Sometimes the stupidity of humanity is enough to drive you crazy. So let's try to clear the air here, people. Let's try to understand how the psychological industry here in America has done such a piss-poor job of teaching people what boundaries really are. It's gotten so bad that people are acting badly, people are unhealthy, they're destroying their relationships, they're looking like complete loons that are in need of a cranium rectum extraction because they fail to understand the actual purpose of a boundary. They often confuse boundaries with what I like to call perimeters, fences, stone walls. Let's talk about it. A boundary is an agreed upon line in the sand. Illinois knows where Illinois stops. Wisconsin knows where Wisconsin starts. So if I'm going from Chicago to Milwaukee, there's a point in time where I leave Illinois and I enter Wisconsin. That's a boundary. It's a border. I cross that into Wisconsin. And my Google Maps will say, welcome to Wisconsin. The beauty about going into Wisconsin is you can go up there and smell their dairy air. Oh, yum. Oh, smells so good. And then when I'm coming back from Milwaukee, there's a point where Google Maps says, welcome to Illinois. You see, there is a line in the sand, a theoretical line, even on a computer mapping system on my Google Maps. Because it knows when I leave Illinois and enter Wisconsin, that boundary, that border is negotiated, right? As I was saying at the top of this show, fighting is allowed in hockey. It is an agreed upon rule. It is an agreed upon and understood rule of engagement. The linesman, who have a tendency to watch the fight and break it up when it hits a certain point. For example, one of the skaters hits the ice, the fight is over. They do that for safety because when you're on the ice, you're within inches of incredibly sharp blades that are on the bottom of everybody's feet who are standing around you. So there is an agreed upon negotiated rule of engagement that fighting is allowed in hockey. But that fight is to stop the minute one of those players hits the ice. Or the linesmen believe that somebody's safety and wellness is in jeopardy. Boundaries, people, are rules of engagement that we agree to. If you have a job and you're one of those rare people today that go to the office and you're supposed to start at 8 o'clock, if you just strolled in at 10, you would be violating a negotiated and agreed upon boundary. a negotiated and agreed upon rule of engagement that you shall be present at the work site at 8 a.m., not stroll in at 9:57. Starbucks coffee in hand with a nice scone. No, you'll probably get a talking to by your boss. You might be written up. Why? Because you violated that rule of engagement. Where are the clearest boundaries? At work. We don't walk in and kiss our coworkers and ask how their weekend was. No, there's agreed upon rules of engagement. And in today's world of diversity, equity, and inclusion, there are even more, and sometimes even very confusing, rules of engagement, creating tension for some people who don't know where those lines are anymore. Mostly people like me, middle-aged white males who have been educated. We have no idea. Although diversity, equity, and inclusion is vitally important. They are vital boundaries that are being negotiated into rules of how we act at work in particular, because we want everyone to have an opportunity. And that's a good thing, right? Like I talked about in the last segment, do you have passion? Do you have compassion? If you're passionate about something, then I would think diversity and equity and inclusion would be important pieces for you, you know, and then that way you have compassion for everyone at the table. But boundaries are rules of engagement that are agreed upon, that are negotiated. Boundary isn't just you saying, I'm not coming to your party because you offended me by not liking my Facebook post. Oh, my gosh. No, that's just you being stupid. Now, you're putting up a fence line. You're putting up a perimeter, like a stone wall that keeps you in and others out. You can consider that a boundary, I guess, or a border. We can get lost in the semantics. But for me, a boundary is a negotiated and agreed upon rule of engagement. My wife and I have them. One in particular is we will not have sex with other people. Right? When this boundary or this rule of engagement is negotiated and agreed upon, when we are standing at an altar in front of God and all of our family and friends, and we will say, I will forsake others. I am making that commitment. I am agreeing to this negotiated rule of engagement. I am agreeing that my sexuality will be contained in this marriage. If I violate it, I'm the one to blame. Often with rules of engagement, like we talked about in the workplace, there are understood consequences that come from that. If I walk up to my coworker and I say, boy, you've got a bodacious set of tatas, I am violating a negotiated rule of engagement. I'm also being a dick, which may lead to me, A, getting written up, or B, getting terminated. Most likely, my female coworker will not want to work with me ever again. And who could blame her? Just being a dork. But I was joking. No. I knew the rule of engagement in the workplace. If I go out and have sex with someone other than my wife, I understood, knew, and agreed to the we shall forsake others, day we die, one of us at least. And if I violate it, I do so of my own free will, and I have violated that rule of engagement. There are rules of engagement that people violate when playing hockey. You can't grab someone by the blade of your stick. That is called hooking. You cannot block someone from behind into the boards, creating a potential danger for their overall physical health. That's called boarding. When you violate an agreed upon rule of engagement in hockey, you will go to the sin bin where you will sit and experience shame for 2 minutes, maybe five. Yesterday, when the line brawl got started, I talked about that in the opening segment. The Manitoba Moose. Remember, I just love saying the word Manitoba. The Manitoba Moose who started it got 2 minutes for cross-checking. This is why the Ice Hawks came to the defense of their player. This is what guys do. We come to the defense of someone on our team, right? Just like the Rebel Alliance in Star Wars. We will come to the defense of someone you have challenged. So the first player that started it all got 2 minutes for cross-checking. Then he got 5 minutes for fighting, which is a fairly standard consequence to even a rule that exists. You can fight, but understand you're going to spend 5 minutes in the sin bin where you will feel shame. And then he got a 10-minute game misconduct, which means he really colored outside of the lines. And, of course, all the fans booed him and cheered when he got skated off the ice by one of the linesmen. But a boundary is a negotiated rule of engagement within our various connections, right? We form connections to people, places, and things to help get our needs met. So when I'm in the workplace, I'm connected to a workplace, coworkers, a job, which means a series of tasks, bosses. I've got multiple connections. Those connections help me fulfill a need that I have for camaraderie, for completing a job, a task, being productive. Lots of reasons I have a career to fulfill my needs, my dreams, my wishes. And I engage with a workplace, a job, a boss, coworkers, in order to get those needs met. Those engagements have rules. Those rules are known as boundaries. When I violate one of those rules intentionally, usually it's intentional. Sometimes it's accidental. But let's be honest. Every one of us reads that employee handbook cover to cover the moment you get it. So occasionally we'll violate a rule unknowingly. Most of us violate them on purpose. We can get into that at another time. But there are boundaries. And even in our personal relationship, we create these boundaries. We negotiate them. My wife and I negotiate that every day. When are you coming home? When do you want to have dinner? What are you thinking about doing for the weekend? We're negotiating boundaries. We're expressing our expectations. We're making sure that both of us are on the same page. Because when we have rules of engagement that we both understand, we both agree to, it creates stability, emotional stability in the relationship. That's why we have boundaries. They're not meant to hit people over the head with. They're meant to create predictability, safety, security in all relationships. That's why you don't walk into work and kiss your employees. We'd like to be able to go to work and not have to be affectionate or kissed unknowingly or to be told we have a bodacious set of tatas. In our personal relationships, we want predictability and stability, and we negotiate these rules of engagement to create that. And when they're violated, that predictability and that stability go out the window, and we have emotional instability. Some of us violate those boundaries because we want to have our own needs met. And we don't believe the relationship in its current state will meet those needs. So what do? As a big-time wimp, we stick our head up butt and we violate the boundary. And then we point fingers when we get caught or when we have to pay the consequence. Man up. Cowboy up. You violated it on purpose. Could you have chosen better? Yes. Could you have been more healthy with your choice? Yes. Could you have been more effective? Maybe not. Because the efficacy came to you want what you want, and you want it now. So you violate that boundary that you set. Occasionally, we'll construct a fence. We'll construct a stone wall. I have a yard. The county has told me where my yard begins and ends. That's a boundary. It's negotiated. And when I buy the property, I live by the negotiated boundaries that existed before I bought the house. But I can put a fence up inside that boundary. That fence keeps things in, mostly my dogs, keeps things out, mostly deer. and the occasional coyote. But when I set up a fence, a stone wall, it's for my own protection. I'm not negotiating it. I'm telling the people with whom I am in relationship, this fence exists. This stone wall exists. It is here for my safety and my safety alone. I'm putting the fence up. Fences are very different from boundaries. They're not unhealthy and ineffective things, but how we communicate where that fence line is, how we communicate why we put the stone wall or the fence in, how we communicate what we're trying to keep in versus or keep out, how we communicate that will determine whether or not our relationships are healthy. If I'm trying to overcome drug and alcohol addiction, and I create a fence line that there is no liquor allowed in my house, and that if people come to visit me, they have to understand there is no liquor. It's not about you. It's about me. I'm putting this fence line up to protect me. There is no liquor. Don't bring it. If you're coming to my barbecue, it's alcohol free. You can't live by my fence line, then don't come. Stay out. What I'm trying to keep in with that fence is sobriety. Fence lines, perimeters, are very different from boundaries. But both boundaries and perimeters are vital to our overall mental wellness.
Don't get me wrong, he seems like a nice guy, but my father's a nice guy, and he's not funny either.
If this is some kind of practical joke, it's not funny.
Don't you know a joke when you hear one?
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
You're gonna need a bigger coach.
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Zima, and I want to tell you about my healing video, Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks, that is available on Amazon's Instant Video Store. Here's what it's all about.
You know, grief is like a vacuum, because it sucks. We sense when a storm is coming. Nobody wants to be known as a griever. We know when a storm is coming. We do everything in our life to avoid grief, yet sometimes we just stay out in the rain. We go out of our way to avoid the pain of loss and the process of grief and get out of the rain and get out of the storm and find that shelter and that hope.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
First and foremost, grief, the thing we all dread, the thing we all try to stay away from, is a healing process. This video is designed to help you develop your own unique style and process of grieving. It's about you discovering how you heal. This video is going to challenge you to find the grieving processes and the coping techniques that are going to work best for you.
You can buy my video or simply rent it via the Amazon Instant Video Store, and it's just a couple of bucks. Hey, for a couple of dollars, will you start your healing today? Cruise on over to BobZima.com to find out how you can download or purchase Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks. Welcome back, everybody. Bob Zima, your pirate king of the hole in the show, hole in the soul crew. There we go. It would be nice if I weren't using rented lips today. I would sound pretty good, but you know. Bob Zima, your rockin' Radio Romeo and the lunatic lover and poet here at the beautiful Grumpy Gator Cafe, where we create Marauder Radio. Every Sunday at 9 a.m. Central Time, we've got just a few minutes left in this show, and I wanted to get over to the mailbag. That's right, the M-A-L-E bag. which is a play on words for the M-A-I-L bag, but the mail bag. And we got email from a gentleman named Scott. Oh, great Scott. Anyways, if you want to send a question in and have it answered on the show, Graham, please go ahead and do that. Bob@bobzima.com, bob@bobzima.com. In the subject, write mailbag, M-A-L-E-B-A-G, and then pose your question. You never know. It may be answered on a upcoming Marauder Radio Live, meant for Marauder Radio for Mental Wellness Live. There we go. Scott asks, how do I tell my wife that I want her to eat dinner with me? And Scott goes on to talk about how he and his wife are recently struggling. They're not getting along. They're not each other's best friends. I guess there was an argument to protect Scott's anonymity. We'll just say that something happened, and all of a sudden, the two of them are not seeing eye to eye. They're not communicating effectively. He goes on to say that he feels like he's living with a roommate and not his wife. And he wants to know, how can I let her know in a healthy and effective way that I would like to resume our ritual, our pattern, of having dinner together? He told me that at times the couple will order DoorDash. He will cook. She will cook. But when the food is plated and ready to be consumed, Scott goes on to say that she takes her food and goes upstairs. She has an office that she works from home at and is on the computer, either working or watching television, and I guess stays up there for most of the evening. And they do not interact. And he would like to resume the two of them eating together. He said sometimes they would eat at a dining room table. Sometimes they would eat at the kitchen island. Sometimes there would be silence. Sometimes there would be conversation. So the first thing I'm going to say, Scott, is remember there is a continuum of communications called the tell, ask, inform. Tell, ask, inform. I've got a YouTube video on this, so you can check that out as well. In tell, ask, inform. So I usually tell people right away, or I say to people, that if you ask someone a question, you immediately lose any leverage. You also, as I talked about in the last segment with boundaries, you also kind of sign a contract and buy into the fact that when you ask someone a question, you're obligated and bound to their answer. You limit your ability to negotiate with that person. Let me give you an example. If Scott were to say to his wife, would you like to eat dinner with me? She has a chance to say no, slams the door. The conversation has no room to maneuver. There's no room there for Scott to collaborate and negotiate. Would you like to eat together tonight? No. It's done. It's over. It's shut down. Question, you're obligated to the answer. You say to your spouse, what would you like for dinner tonight? She says spaghetti. You don't want spaghetti. You wanted chicken and waffles. You're obligated to spaghetti. Because if you say, hey, I don't really want spaghetti, what is she going to say? Well, why the hell did you ask me that? Makes sense. Asking narrows the opportunity for collaboration and negotiation. Sometimes after we've asked and been shut down, or we anticipate that if we ask, we will be shut down, we then move to a little bit more over-the-top, you know, kind of bullying approach, which is to tell someone, we're eating dinner tonight. We're eating dinner tonight together at the table. We're eating dinner tonight together at the island. I don't care if we don't say a thing. We will physically be together. That's what we're doing. You're not taking your plate of what happens. We become a bully. When we tell somebody something, we're commanding, we're demanding. When we ask, we take a one down and we lose the ability to negotiate and collaborate. So to ask and to tell are two dead-end approaches. But if you inform, you leave room, you leave space and grace for that relationship to have a conversation, for there to be collaboration, for there to be negotiation. What does informed look like? So in Scott's case, he might say, either in a text earlier in the day or when he and his wife are together in the same space, is to say, I was thinking it would be really nice to eat our dinner in the same space. He's not telling. He's not asking. He's simply informing. He's using a communication skill known as immediacy. He's sharing what he's thinking, what he's feeling, and what he wants. Totally effective. May not get what he wants, but at least he's being very healthy by not asking, by not commanding or telling or demanding. But he's also being effective because he's communicating what he's thinking, feeling, and what he wants. Honey, I was thinking it would be a really wonderful experience if we both ate dinner together this evening, right? He's simply informing. So when you are struggling in a relationship, there's tension. The communication has been highly ineffective, highly unhealthy, because the two of you may have been going back and forth like rock'em sock'em robots. But you want to put an end to it. You want to be healthy. You want to be able to articulate what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you need, and do it in a healthy way. Then inform. Don't ask. And don't allow your anxiety and your rising level of stress, your stress response, your fight-flight response, don't let that kick in and become a teller, a demander, a commander, right? Don't become a wimp and ask and lose all leverage. Don't become a jerk and take one over the top. Rather, go right down the middle and inform that person what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and what would be a really wonderful thing. It would be really enjoyable if we had dinner together tonight at the island. You're informing. You're creating space and grace for collaboration. Now, Scott's wife may say, F you, no way, I'm eating upstairs. Okay. Who's unhealthy now? Who is bullying now? Who is going over the top now? Scott can put his head on the pillow at night, that night, saying, I communicated effectively in a healthy way. The response I got back, not so much. And that's not to point the fingers or blame his wife. But at the end of the day, he knows he did the right thing. He informed. He didn't ask. He didn't tell. He just informed. And he kept his cool. And when she says, no effing way, he can say, not a problem, and grab his plate and walk away. It hurts, but he's the healthier, much more effective person in this scene the two of them just played out.
Time for me.
Here is done. I'm needed elsewhere now. I'm needed wherever outlaws rule the West. Wherever innocent women and children are afraid to walk the streets. Wherever a man cannot live in simple dignity. And wherever a people cry out for justice.
Bullshit!